rock and our redeemer. Amen. That's better. Okay, so this is our culture. If you're sitting at a table with friends, say at dinner, and you're not sure of something, what do? You look it up. Not in an encyclopedia when you get home, requiring you to wait, but immediately, at dinner, with friends, a question comes up, and you Google the answer, which at times can be fun. So fun, in fact, that I'm often the first one to do it because I like being the one with the answer. But if there's someone else at the table who's also doing it, then you have a whole second layer of fun because now you're racing that person to be the first one with the answer. But there's a different kind of thrill. It's been with us since the beginning of time, not knowing. And the value that that brings. I mean, first, there's the moment at the table where no one knows the answer, and then there's this pause and a silence. And sitting in that silence out loud together, wondering what the answer might be, is really a kind of art. We're losing the art of conversation in so, so many ways, and this is just one way. Instead of looking up the answer, there is a beauty in wondering out loud together. Maybe this is the answer. Oh yeah, says the other person across the table. Or maybe this. And then a third person chimes in. And a fourth. All possibilities. Each person building upon the other's wondering into a beautiful imagined answer. A collaborative imagined answer, every bit as real in that moment as anything else. And we are, as a whole in our culture, becoming less tolerant of the not knowing that leads us into wondering and into the imagination. I'm on a mission to bring those back, but I might have to throw out my cell phone in the process. To just wonder is a gift, and it is like a muscle that needs exercise. It's a gift we're born with. Just hang out with a three-year-old. Why is the sky blue? Why is the grass green? Where do the stars end? Why is the moon round? It's not lost on me that there are a lot of engineers in this congregation, all of whom have answers to those questions for me. But my point is that we were born with the ability to wonder, and there is wisdom in not knowing. And Jesus knew it. And the Sadducees in this morning's scriptures, they're testing him. It's a wonderful story. I mean, they start off reasonably. They point to the Torah in the Hebrew Bible. I mean, this is what Moses taught us, they say. If a man's brother dies and leaves behind a widow with no children, then the brother is obligated to marry the widow. Oh, and then if that brother dies, they say, and the next brother marries her, and they do this seven times. And finally, they turn to the real question, only they're not at all interested in the answer. They're making a point. They're saying, if there's a resurrection of the dead, then who exactly does this woman belong to? So maybe they start to walk away, you know, their hands in their pocket, proud of the point that they made. Or maybe they lean in like a fisherman waiting to see if Jesus will take the bait. And Jesus does this brilliant thing. He responds without falling into any trap. He meets them exactly where they are by pointing back to the Torah that they first pointed to themselves. And he points to the next age as a place that moves out of this age, out of marriage, and beyond to the resurrection where they are. And I quote, he says, "They are equal to angels and are the sons and daughters of God, being sons and daughters of the resurrection. But that the dead are raised, even Moses showed in the passage about the bush where he calls the Lord of God the God of Abraham and of the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob now. He is not God of the dead, but of the living, for all live to him. Or in more simpler words, God is a God of the living now, and the living who live in ways we can't possibly understand. We don't have a roadmap. We don't have GPS. We can't Google what happens when we go. But we can trust in a God who is eternal and eternally holding us in this life and after this life, in a life that we can't see or taste or touch, but we trust with our whole being the same way we trust that God is with us right now. Last week, I talked about all the little ways that we trust in ways we have no trouble trusting. We trust that the bus is going to come, that we're going to arrive safely at point B, that Christmas is going, that we'll be here for that, that our kids will get into a good school. We trust these things all the time. We trust that God is with us right now. It's not a perfect roadmap. We get lost, for sure, and we doubt and we wonder, but we are given everything we need to live and to die in trust, trusting love in the same way it is trusting God, a love that never dies but is with us eternally. There's a beautiful interpretation of the psalm that you heard this morning. Now, you might remember that in the Hebrew Bible, the word God is Yahweh. It's an untranslatable word. And so this translation of the psalm uses not the word Lord, but the word eternal as a name for God. I lift up my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the eternal. My help comes from the eternal, the maker of heaven and earth. The eternal is your guardian. The eternal is your protection. Now, eternal, that's a word that's really hard for us to wrap our heads around. So, ironically, I Googled it. And, ironically, the definition opens up my imagination rather than shutting down the conversation, because here's the definition: without end or beginning, which means it's timeless. God is a God of the living without end or beginning, now and eternally. As I was writing this and thinking about the proof that the Sadducees were looking for from Jesus, you know, what they wanted him to prove, what he knew. And so I was reminded of my high school friend, Linda Kramer, whose father, Mr. Kramer, used to say, every time he saw me, he used to say, "What do you know, Nicole?" Here's what I know, only I don't know it. But I believe it with all my heart, all my soul, all my strength. Death is a part of life. We all know that. It's as natural as anything else. And the more we accept that and examine that, the more the roadmap points us back to the direction of our life, not our death. Accepting death allows us to embrace our life. After she was diagnosed with metastatic cancer that ultimately took her life, author Nina Riggs said this: "Dying isn't the end of the world. There are so many things that are worse than death. Old grudges, a lack of self-awareness, severe constipation, no sense of humor, the grimace on your husband's face as he empties your surgical drain into the measuring cup. If we get any roadmap, it's the one that directs us right back to this life, the one we're living. And the loved ones who have gone before us point us time and time again back to this life and the ways in which we love now. It's in direct relationship to the ways that we continue to love them. And I have a reading for you from that same wonderful book, a story written by Diane Cole. She says, "One morning shortly after my mother died, a hesitant tap on the shoulder stopped me as I left the synagogue where I had just finished saying the mourner's Kaddish. I turned to face a fellow morning service regular, a tall gray-haired gentleman with a football player's thick build. He said, 'I don't mean to be presumptuous. I know you're very sad right now. But I wanted to tell you that I went through that too when my father died several years ago. And here's the thing, believe it or not, I am as close to my father now as when he was alive, maybe even closer, because I have come to understand him better. He's inside me. I hear his voice. We're still that close.' And then the man smiled and waved goodbye, leaving me to ponder the words that I began to understand only years later. What he meant, I think, was that our dead inhabit us like ghosts. The trick, as he knew then and I have learned since, is to befriend them rather than to have them haunt us. They will greet us on sad anniversaries as well as in joy. We will imagine them on the arrival of our grandchild. And we will call them back from memory, the words and the actions of the one person to whom we would have turned if they were still there. And eventually, when we hear that voice again, because we will, it will bring not just pain, but great comfort and resolution." End quote. They are with us. And the choices we make about how to live the good life now, they live in those choices. They are in direct relationship to how we honor their memories, even when things were imperfect. Because love is imperfect. But if we've learned anything collectively, it's that we tend to forget those imperfections over time. I know this as a parent. It's especially true. I don't remember the tantrums and the sleepless nights, not nearly as much as I remember the first birthday cake or the first steps. And if there's one book in the Bible that searches these existential questions of what we're all doing here, it's the book of Ecclesiastes. It's a wonderful book in the Bible. It struggles with the meaning of life in light of death. Again and again, it repeats this refrain, "Vanity, vanity, all is vanity." It's a pessimistic outlook. But King Solomon, whom the book is attributed to, is not just pessimistic. He sees a way out of the abyss. And the solution is to embrace the temporary nature of life without looking beyond. To savor this moment, we must focus on the here and now. There's no permanence. But if that's not enough, and it's not for me, there's something else in our Bible and in our lives that brings us comfort. It lives in the second half of the book. It lives in the life of Jesus Christ and in the death of Jesus Christ, and most especially in the resurrection of Jesus. It lives in a resurrection we can't possibly wrap our heads around, nor should we try to Google our way into understanding, but rather just sit with it in the silence until the silence is no longer uncomfortable, but brings comfort. Because in the wisdom of not knowing is a beautiful truth. Jesus Christ from death lives eternally in our lives here and beyond, just as our loved ones live eternally here and beyond through our love. God is indeed a God of the living, and Christ is our living gift for the eternal love of God. This life after, neither one comes with a Google map. We have this moment, we have this love, and each time we fill it with love, reconciliation, forgiveness, kindness, Jesus is alive and surrounding us, eternally present and with us. Amen.